Thank you, Miss Chelsea Waters. Enjoyed that. We are blessed. Thank you very much. Talented. Morning, church. Happy Sabbath. Glad to see you here. And we're glad that you could worship with us today, and especially to our visitors, a very warm welcome. And may you enjoy your day with us. As Pastor Hadu prayed about the New Zealand tragedy, our hearts go out to them. And we all are co-equals in the sight of God. It doesn't matter where you come from, what you are, what your religious backgrounds. We need to respect every person on this planet. And so, and this is why with this series, Jesus preached this powerful sermon, the Sermon on the Mount. And we've did a two series so far. And I think Jesus knew that men's heart would be failing them. And that's what's happening around the world. And this is why the sermon is so pertinent. And it's relevant for our time. And so, titled the sermon this morning on the third part of our series, A Sermon on the Mount, A Christian's Influence. And it's titled Salt and Light. If you have your Bibles, or you can follow me on the screen on your little technology pads there. Matthew 5, chapter 3, verses 13 to 16. You are the salt of the earth, but if salt has lost its taste, how shall its saltiness or saltness be restored? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trodden underfoot by men. Second part, you are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hid, nor do men light a lamp and put it under a bushel, but on a stand, and it gives light to all in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see what? Your good works, and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. May God have his blessing in the reading of his word. The Beatitudes, the first two sermons that we started on the series, we describe the Christian's character, the character of the Christian. Now, Jesus brings in two metaphors. He brings in the metaphor of salt. He brings in the metaphor of light. And he brings us to show what influence, and this is why the sermon is very important for us as Christians, what influence we as Christians can have in this tough world. Is it a tough world? Yes, from yesterday's experience, we tell us we are living in a very, very tough world. We are living in a very complicated world. We are living in a world that is on a slide. And so we're asking this question, and from the first two sermons, from the Beatitudes, can the poor, can the mourners, can the merciful, can the meek have a lasting influence? These are all the sideliners in society today. If we say, hey, our qualifications are, we are mourners, we are merciful, we are meek. What? Where do you guys come from? Which planet? Because the world shows the otherwise. You've got to be a macho. You've got to be the center of the stage. You've got to be everything. Mourners, merciful as? Can I say that? Or meek as? Can the peacemakers make a difference in this world? What can the righteous accomplish? The only weapon the righteous has is the purity of heart. What can they accomplish? Are these people too feeble to have any influence or achieve anything in our society? And apart from being feeble, this group, the mourners, the seekers, the peacemakers, are a small minority in the world. What influence can they make in this world? You see, Jesus was not a skeptic. When he preached the sermon, he knew what he was saying. In fact, he was the reverse. He's a, I call Jesus a contrarian thinker. As the crowds are moving this way, Jesus comes and says, hang on, this is the way. And so, you see, friends, I preached in my last sermon that the world is going to persecute us as Christians. Is that true? But yet, it is the church's calling to serve the persecuting world. Can you see that? The world is going to persecute us, but we are called to serve the persecuting world. Contrarian thinking, reverse thinking. If somebody's persecuting you, what are you going to do? You're going to take out your machete, like in Africa we were. Or you're going to take your guns out. You've got a stack of guns in your house. And you're going to seek revenge. You see, friends, this is our only retaliation to serve the persecuting world. Can you see what Christianity is about? That's our only retaliation. The common truth behind these metaphors is that the church and the world are very distinct communities. In fact, there are two communities. Two communities. It is you and the world. And that's the reason you are here. You are the you, and here's the world outside. They and you. Yes, you are related to each other. You did not come to be in a bubble as one singer would like to be in a bubble. No. You are related to each other. You have a distinct relationship. See, it's fashionable for people to say today, the church should be the same as the world. Have you heard people say that? We should be no different from the world. We should be the same as the world. But these metaphors tell us something about both communities. That the world is a dark place. There's little or no light in the world. The world needs some external light to illuminate it. You see, the world talks about enlightenment. In reality, it's in darkness. They say, we are now enlightened. In the 1800s, we're now living in an enlightened world. Society is improving. In reality, it is darkness. The world is constantly on a slide. In fact, one writer says, the world is putrefying. It cannot stop itself from going bad. Only salt introduced from the outside can change the world. You see, the church has a double role. The church has to be the salt. You've got to be the salt. And salt does what? I was asking my wife to I told her, I'm preaching on this as before we go to bed. I said, give me a sermon. And she went into detail. I said, honey, that's not it. Just give me the simple stuff. She went to she went into detail defining the salt and going into the chemistry. But you see, the church is going to hinder the process of social decay. Can you see what the church is going to do? We are the salt. We're going to hinder the process of decaying in society. That's your job. And the church as light, it's going to dispel the darkness that they are living in. Can you see the two roles? We have a dual role. You are the salt of the earth. You are the salt of the earth. So salt has, as I say, how many of you eat saltless food? There's a few people here. Yes, yes. Too much of salt is what? Very dangerous, dangerous. And salt's used in preservatives. And so many of us here that grew up, how many of you grew up before the days of fridges? You're giving your age away, I know. But I grew up in the days where there were no fridges. There was no fridges around. And if you cooked your meal, if you made your meal in Africa, and you know that, if you made your meal on a Sabbath afternoon, and we were so terrified of cooking after the Sabbath when sun sets, you know how they grew up. But if you made your meal a little early, Sabbath lunch is gone bad. No refrigeration. We try to keep the food in some water, in some cold, but you come after church, your food's gone off. Now, one of the favorite dishes in South Africa is biltong. Now, my son loves biltong. Every time he goes to any part of the country, by the way, my wife brought some salt. Sal yodada, it's iodized salt. Too technical for me. Don't know what it is about. But let me show you what's biltong. Whew. This is spicy biltong. Now, if you want to taste it, come after church and see me. I brought some here. Those who have, Joe is not for you. You know? Now, you can see this biltong here. It's all preserved in salt. It's got from kudu meat and buck meat and all the wild animals out there. And so they take this biltong. As I said, my son goes any part of the country, and when he finds a South African store, he gets in there and he buys his biltong. It's cut into a specific shape, it's designed, and it's preserved with a lot of salt. With a lot of salt. It's bad. It's bad for you. Don't come and eat this thing here. So now it's rubbed with salt. It's basically, you can keep this for how long? How long? Almost for a year or so, if you don't have expiry date on these things. Don't have expiry date. You can eat it anytime. So salt is a great preservative. A great preservative. Now, this affirmation that Jesus gives to us, he says, you are the salt of the earth. In fact, it's a straightforward affirmation. You are the light of the world. In a world where moral standards are low, in a world that is constantly changing, in a world where morals at times don't exist, we are to be a moral disinfectant. Write that down somewhere. I like that line. A writer did it very well. We've got to be a moral disinfectant. You see, for salt to be effective, it has some conditions. For salt to be effective, we need to have some conditions. It must retain its saltiness. How many of you had salt where it had no saltiness? Now, let me speak from a chemistry point of view. You, most of you did chemistry in school. You see, salt can never lose its saltness. Did you know that? Salt can never lose, from a chemistry point of view, salt can never lose its saltness. Now, from your charts in high school, what's another name for salt? Oh, man, this is a smart class. Sodium chloride, okay? And now, sodium chloride is a very stable chemical compound. It cannot change. In fact, sodium chloride is resistant to any attack. Nothing can attack sodium chloride from the outside. But you know, that very same sodium chloride, when it's mixed with some other chemical, it can resist everything else. But when you take it and mix it with some impurities, it becomes what? Totally useless. It becomes totally useless. In fact, it even becomes dangerous. It's so contaminated that you cannot use it for compost. That's how useless it is. This is why we find salt piles basically all over. And so Jesus is telling us, you've got to have salt in yourselves. And our saltiness is our Christian character. Did you get that? Our saltiness is our Christian character. We must retain its Christ-likeness to be effective. Did you get that? We must retain its Christ-likeness to be effective as salt retains its saltness to be effective. What happens when we become integrated with the world? What happens when we become contaminated with impurities of the world? We lose our influence. You cannot be an influence. You become part of them. You see, our influence depends on being distinct, not being identical. Did you get that? Our influence depends on being distinct and not being identical. You see, when the church is different from the world, when you are different from your colleagues, they will be attracted to you. If we are indistinguishable from the world, in fact, we are totally useless. If the world cannot differentiate between you and the world, you are totally useless to the world. We might be discarded like salt, thrown down and trodden underfoot, as the Bible says. You're totally useless. And friends, what a dishonor. From being saviors of society to supplying material to footpaths. That's what happens. And so, Christ is calling us to be the salt of the world, to reflect his character, to be Christ-like. And that, basically, when you reflect that in society, when you are contagious, you're helping to stop the decay of society. Can you see your part? You have a very important part. And Jesus said, also, you are the light of the world. He says, you are the light. And one time he says, what? I am the light of the world. Did he say that? Jesus said, I am the light of the world. We need to be shining with the light of Jesus Christ, shining in the world like stars in the night. Now, wouldn't it be nice if non-Christians came to us and they asked us, what is the source of your light? And if they went further and they said, twinkle, twinkle, little star, how I wonder what you are. How come you are so different from the world? How? Why are you shining? Why is this difference in your life, little star? And this is why Jesus says, let your light, what? Shine before men. And friends, this is your light. It's good works. And you make an influence in society. You see, when they respond, when they see your good works, what is their response? When people in society see the good works that you are doing, not good works to justify yourself to get to heaven, but when they see the good works that is coming naturally from you, spontaneously because you're filled with the grace of God, what do? When they see that? Yes, they give glory to the Father in heaven. Wow. What has come over you? What is this change all about? And you don't take the credit. In fact, they would say, wow, this God has had a powerful influence in your life. So good works expresses loyalty to God and to our fellow men. You see, friends, if salt can lose its saltness, the light in us can become darkness also. We are to allow the light of Christ to shine within us. And people will see it. We need to be, as the Bible says, like a city on a hill which cannot be hid, nor stuck under a bucket where it can do no good. And in fact, it's telling us we are not to hide the truth that we have received. Most of us are shy. Shy just to say a prayer for your food in a restaurant. You look around and see. Anybody seeing? Lord bless his food quickly and amen. We don't want to share what we received. We're too scared. We don't want to share the light. You don't want to say how God has blessed you. You don't want to say what prayer has done in your life. We're too scared to sell it to an atheist. In fact, when you speak to a non-Christian or a non-believer and you tell him what God has done in your life, he's got nothing to say because he can see the results in your life, the impact it has in your life. We are not to hide the truth we know or the truth of what we are. We are not to pretend to be other than we are. Our Christianity is to be visible. Our Christianity is to be visible. A person who seeks to hide himself has stopped following Jesus Christ. If you're trying to hide yourself and not to show that you are a Christian, then you are not a follower of Jesus Christ. If you're trying to blend with the world, if you're trying to be one with the world, and if you're trying to fall under peer pressure, basically you're not following Jesus Christ. We are to be true to ourselves, not ashamed of Jesus Christ. Was Christ ashamed of you? No. No. He didn't say, well, I don't want to become a man. I am God. I am God. I don't want to become a man. If I become a man, I'm going to a next category. I'm going right down below the angels. Do you want me to become a man? See, God wasn't ashamed to become a man. He wasn't ashamed to become a man. More than that, he wasn't ashamed to hang naked on the cross just for you. How much more should we appreciate what Jesus has done for us? He's taken the second step. We are what we are, that our light is his light, and that our works are his works. It is light that they will praise, not the lamp that bears it. They will glorify God in heaven for what you are doing in society. So, what lessons can we learn from the salt and light metaphors? There are a few lessons that we can learn from this, just as two liners that Jesus gave us. And metaphors teach us about our Christian responsibilities. And so there's three important lessons, very simple lessons that we can learn. Firstly, There is a fundamental difference between Christians and non-Christians. Is that true? Between the church and the world. You see, there are some Christians who seem indistinguishable from non-Christians. Have you seen people like that? They're one with the world. They minimize the difference between the world and themselves. And by the way, that's the tragedy of the church since its inception. And right up until today, where Revelation talks about it, where we want to conform to the prevailing culture of this world. And there's big debates going on. No, we've got to be like the world. We've got to be as culture operates. We've got to be like this, like the world. And so, friends, that's a tragedy. Instead of developing a Christian counterculture, that's what Jesus called us to do. Contrarian. A Christian counterculture is totally from the world. It's totally different from what the world offers. And so there is, and keep this in mind, you're the salt, you're the light. There is a fundamental difference between the church and the world. You are the salt. You are the light. Now there is darkness. There's no similarities. You are called to stop the decay, not to be part of the decaying world. Secondly, we must accept the responsibility which this distinction puts upon us. We need to accept the responsibility. We are the earth's salt. We are the world's light. You must not fail this world. Did you get that? You must not fail this world. You are called to serve this world. And that's the reason you're a Christian. You're called to serve this world. And some of us don't ever serve the world at all. You must be what you are. You are salt. You need to retain your saltness and not lose your Christ-likeness as you leave this place. And that's what happens to most of us. Is that true? Once we immerse into the world, nobody can tell the difference between the salt and light and between the darkness that's out there. This is why this sermon is so, in fact, it's like Christ spoke it yesterday. It's so relevant for us. You are light, and so let your light shine. Don't hide your light. Be proud of it. What are some of the ways we hide our light? Let me ask you the question. What are some of the ways we hide our light? Shout out your answers. Sorry? Embarrassment, yes. You don't want to be embarrassed. Yes, true. Sin is when you don't shine your light. When you compromise, when you're compromising situations, you don't shine your light. When you're lazy, laziness, is that part of our society? Absolutely. I just want to do the minimum. I'm a Christian, but this is how much of time I have for you, God. I'm too lazy to do anything else. Laziness, we hide our light. Fear, we hide our light. Is it, yeah? Friends, we have a powerful responsibility. And this is why we've got no time for complaining and standing around and trying to sort things out and trying to be judgmental on others. No, you have a huge task. I was sitting in Rogers and race class this morning, and we're saying there's about 5 billion people that are not Christians on this planet. And the billion Christians, a billion and a half Christians, half of them believe something else. So God's got a really small group of preachers that he calls mourners and seekers and all the rest of it to share with the world. You have an awesome task. So let's not fiddle around with small things. We have a huge task to finish, friends. He has brought us thus far for a very special reason. And this morning, I think of our young people. I don't want to be young. I mean, I'd like to be young. Don't get me wrong. I'm 62 now. But I'd like to be young. No, but not living now. I don't want to be young and living now. My heart goes out to all the young people here. You're living in the most challenging time of this world's history. You see, when we were young, we just only had the sand to play. We had the sand to play, make ourselves dirty in the mud. We pick up a little piece of tin there and we play with it. No. And you saw the children outside as soon as they finished school. You see any kids out today? No. Sometimes I think it's a summer, they will come out. I don't blame the winters, you know, it's cold. But you don't see a single kid out. Fancy streets, fancy ballparks, fancy playgrounds and all the rest of it. Try to look for kids. Tough world we're living in. It's a tough world. The pressure is there. The problems are huge. And young people, they feel frustrated in this modern world. They feel small and feeble. They feel ineffective. They feel alienated. They feel victims of the situation. Saw this kid yesterday? Live shot, he puts, walking into the mosque. And he's filming it live on YouTube so that the world can see. And as he walks into the mosque and he kicks the door, and he's saying, this is what's happening live. Tough society to live in. And he exposes this 24 hours, people killing themselves on YouTube and on Facebook. Live. I spoke to a guy who works there. His job is to basically eliminate all the bad graphics. And he says, they've got such a large department in the company, eliminating this thing by the minute. He says, if they don't stop it, you would see some of the worst things you've never seen in your life. That'll be televised, coming live to you on the minute that people taking their lives away and executing other people. It's a tough world for young people to live. Young people feel victims of the situation. They seem strangled by the system, overwhelmed by this political changing, political scenario, the political situation and the social and the economic situation, no jobs. You have no control over them. You're powerless to change. What message could we have for a technocratic society? Everybody's on a little pad somewhere. Go in any part of the world. Jamaica, right in the countryside. Someone's walking like this, almost tripping down. You know, hundreds of people are dying because they're not looking at traffic today. A technocratic society that we are living in, what's the message do we have for them? You experience frustration, especially the young people. What can I do, you ask? What can I do? To young people. It is from this frustration that you are experiencing that revolutionaries are made and bred. Did you get that? It is from this frustration that revolutionaries are made and bred. That's how we have violent overthrows of governments and different kinds of system, oppressive systems, from this kind of frustration. But also, it is from this frustration that revolutionaries of Jesus can arise. Did you get that? It is from this frustration that revolutionaries of Jesus can rise. And these revolutionaries are committed to spreading his revolution. And what is the revolution of Jesus? What is the revolution of Jesus? It's love. It's joy. It's peace. A peaceful revolution is more radical than a program of violence. Can you see that, friends? The standards of Jesus' revolution is a peaceful revolution which is uncorrupted. It changes people. It changes structures. And friends, this is why I say when Jesus preached this message, he was a revolutionary. How can you take on the most powerful government in the world at that time, the Roman government? How can you take them on? And Jesus is preaching, you can be peacemakers. You can be mourners. You can be this. You can be seekers. That's how we can change the world. And friends, the question now I want to ask you this morning, have you lost your confidence in the power of the gospel of Jesus Christ? It's coming from God himself who became man. It's Jesus. And he's uttering these words. And he says, this would make the difference, not the $5, $10 billion or $1 trillion we're wasting on the ammunition in our country. And all the countries are wasting 70% of their budget for military. No, that's not going to change the world. The United Nations is not going to change the world. No, friends, you and I, who are salt and light, we are going to make an impact on the world. We are going to make a difference in the world. We are going to stop the decay because we are the salt of this world, friends. Listen to Luther, Martin Luther, with his single word, that is Christ's word, I can be more defiant and boastful than they with all the power, sword, and guns. Powerful. Powerful, friends. So we are not helpless. We are not powerless after all. His gospel, his ideals, his power will make all the difference. Jesus Christ is all salt and light, friends. This dark and rotten world needs. That's what it needs. It needs all the salt. It needs all the light. And so if we are half salt and half light, we're not going to make a difference in the world, friends. We're not going to make a difference in this world. We must have salt in ourselves. We must let our light shine. Point three, we must see our Christian responsibility as twofold. Salt and light have one thing in common. And by the way, every home has it. Even if your diet is saltless, you'll have salt somewhere in your house. And I think this is why when Jesus was growing up as a young boy, he saw his mother light the lamp every night. And he saw his dark house lighted. And he saw, live not too far from the Dead Sea. He saw the salt piles up there. And this is how we made this metaphor. So we must see our Christian responsibility as twofold. Salt and light have one thing in common. They give and expend themselves. And you see what light does? Go into a dark room, what the light does. The light doesn't say, okay. I'm just going to shine in this corner now. No, what does the light say? I'm not worried about you. I'm going to brighten this entire place. It's the opposite of any kind of self-centered religiosity. The effects of salt and light are complementary. You see, the function of salt is negative. It does what? It prevents decay. The function of light is positive. It illuminates darkness. And Jesus called us to exert a double influence on society. A negative influence by arresting its decay, and a positive influence by bringing light into darkness. We are called to be both salt and light in the circular community. And what happens when society suppresses truth? Is society suppressing truth? Yes, you cannot make the difference today. From politicians to presidents, who are basically don't know what is a lie and a truth. It worsens. Values and standards are steadily declining. The world is utterly corrupt. They reject God, and this is why Romans chapter 1, basically what was written yesterday, God gives them up to their own distorted notions and perverted passions. In fact, God says, I'm done with you. We're coming to a time. And God says, I had enough. I'm withdrawing my spirit from this world. I had enough with you. I've given you long enough rope. And yet, friends, we still have time. You're called. You're called. You're called to hinder this process of rottenness that's taking place in the world. And God intends us to infiltrate this world. And Christian salt has no business to remain snugly in elegant church salt cellars. No. Have you had salt cellars today? Let's care about our own church. Let's we become our own pillar. Our own this. Become very nice salt pillars in the church. We snug here. We don't want to know what's happening outside. We don't want to contaminate ourselves. No, friends. Our place is to be rubbed into the circular community as salt is rubbed into the meat to stop it from decaying. So we need to get out in society and rub our saltiness on them. Can you see that, friends? We have a very important task. And when society goes bad, we Christians tend to throw up our hands and say, oh, see what's happening in society. What's happening? In virtuous horror, we say, what's happening to society? But friends, you cannot blame unsalted meat for going bad. Can you blame that? That meat there, it's rotting and it's going to rot. Why? There's no preservatives. The world is going to rot. Why? There's no salt there. You cannot blame them for getting rotten. They cannot do anything else. But the real question is, don't put your hands in virtuous horror and say, hey, what's happening? The real question is, where's the salt? We're in our little pillars up here. We're in our little edifices up here. We are so nice and peaceful in up here. And God is asking us, I called you to be salt. And your job is to be out there. Friends, what does it mean to practice to be the salt of the earth? We are called to be more courageous. We are called to be more outspoken. We are called to condemn evil. Action of salt is negative, as I told you. And when standards slide in our community, in fact, when the standards go down in society, like a child, when he makes a mistake, he's looking for someone to correct him. The world is looking for someone to say, hey, where's the standard? Where's the standard? Where's the standard of morality? And then you come and say, here's the standard. Here's God's law. Here's God's moral law. And friends, we should take our stand boldly in society for what is true, good, and decent, whether in our neighborhood, college, your profession, or your business. You need to stand up for what you believe. Christian salt takes effect by deeds as well as words. Know you're studying your quarterly 7 days a week in your closet and coming here to challenge us with all your smart questions and answers? No. Totally useless. You need to take that outside, friends, your deeds and your words. And doesn't matter, you don't have to take bold steps. It's like running. When I start up my big marathon, I look at the 90 kilometers and I say, when I'm going to finish 90 kilometers? 10 hours later, I'm crossing the 90 kilometer mark. But it starts off with me doing what? Taking that one step 6 o'clock in the morning. And finishing it up 5 o'clock in the afternoon, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, running for 10 solid hours. How did I do it? I took the first step. How does a Christian take it? Don't go and make bold steps because you're going to fall. You're going to become discouraged. Small steps. The small part you make in your community. God has called you to your community. He doesn't call you to the world. Forget about the rest of the world. That's God's job. You get me? He's called you to your little workplace. He's called you to your little factory. He's called you to your little office. He's called you to your little college. And more than that, not to the entire college, he's called you to your small group of people that you're associating with. Can you make an impression? When they asked Gandhi, how can you transform India? It's such a big country, was ruled by the colonialists for all these years. How can you, a small man in a little shoe, yeah, you don't have a proper pants on, you got a little skirt on your waistline, how can you overturn this empire that's been in existence for such long times? And Gandhi's words were, each one, teach one. Jesus' words, each one, teach one. That's what you're called to do. Each one, teach one. And friends, we are called to change the structures which will guarantee us justice in legislation and law enforcement. We are called to stand up for that. Freedom and dignity of the individual. We are called that. We are called for civil rights and minorities, like what happened yesterday. We call for the abolition of social and racial discrimination. And we should not despise these things nor avoid our responsibility for them. They are part of God's purpose for his people. And friends, to wash your hands of society is not love, but worldliness. We can't be living in our ivory pillars and glass houses, friends. The world needs more than a barricade. To stop them becoming as bad as they could be, they need regeneration. The world needs regeneration. The world needs renewal. The world needs rebirth. They need new life through the gospel. And friends, we are called to be the light of the world. We are called to be the truth of the gospel. We're called to spread the gospel. In conclusion, friends, salt is how I impact society. Light is how I take the message of the world, of the gospel to the world. Can you see that? They go hand in hand. You cannot choose to be salt. Oh, I only want to be salt. Oh, I cannot choose to be only light and live a contrarian life on the other side. No, friends, salt and light, the world needs both. The world needs you to make an influence, and also they need the gospel. They need the truth. It is bad and it needs salt. It is dark and it needs light. And our Christian vocation, my Christian vocation, and your Christian vocation is to be both. The preservative qualities of salt alone cannot save anyone. The preservative qualities alone of salt cannot save a nation. No. Friends, only the light of the world can save us from eternity. That's why they go together. We are the salt that preserves and protects. And the gospel message is the light. This, friends, works wonders of resurrection in the spiritual lives of the lost. And so the question is, a question to us this morning, am I the salt of the earth, and am I the light of this world? God bless you.